Hello everyone, welcome to Journal Club with Happy. I'm your host, Happy Kasai, and I'm a graduate student at Vanderbilt University. This podcast is structured as a short scientific journal club where I'll discuss scientific papers and relate their major findings. Generally, journal clubs have a scientific audience ranging from undergraduate science students to university professors. And the language used in journal clubs is very specific to the field of study. For this podcast, I try very hard to use everyday language to explain science. It has not been easy so far, but hopefully it will get better over time. I am also a science student, so in this podcast, we learn science together. Recent episodes of this journal club have been dedicated to Alzheimer's disease research. I am doing a series of papers that investigate Alzheimer's disease from different angles. Episode 5 introduced us to Alzheimer's disease and the amyloid hypothesis. And last week in episode 6, we looked at a very recent paper that recreated the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease in young healthy rats after fecal matter transplantation from human Alzheimer's disease patients. And today I have another paper on Alzheimer's disease. It is an older paper. It is from 2021 and comes out of Dr. Michael Haneke's lab at University Hospital Bonn in Germany. The first author on the paper is Marcus Kummer, and the title of the paper is Microglial PD-1 Stimulation by Astrocytic PD-L1 Suppresses Neuroinflammation and Alzheimer Disease Pathology. For me, the main word in that title is neuroinflammation. It is often thrown around in popular science, and to be honest, I myself do not fully understand what exactly people mean when they say neuroinflammation. However, it is an important term in the study of neurodegeneration and Alzheimer's disease, and that's why I picked this paper for this week. The term neuroinflammation is a combination of neuron and inflammation. We understand that the neuron part explains the location of this process, and whatever is going on is happening in the brain. With that part understood, what exactly is inflammation? Inflammation is another word that I think is overused and needs a very clear definition. There's inflammation from a disease, there's inflammation from a workout, there are foods that are expected to be anti-inflammatory, there's anti-inflammatory medication, but what exactly is inflammation in the body, and more specifically, in the brain, as it relates to Alzheimer's disease? Inflammation is a state in the body where the body's immune system is active against a pathogen or some substance that should not be present under healthy conditions. As the defense system in the body, the immune system recognizes when germs are present and acts against them in an effort to protect the body. This defense is not limited to just germs. If there's any substance in the body that is not present under healthy conditions, then the immune system reacts against it. When we get stung by a bee, the immune system is activated. If we sustain some sort of damage to a body part, as in the case of, let's say, a vigorous workout, the immune system with its actors, which are the immune cells, will react to the tissue damage and start the healing and recovery process. All this reaction from the immune system is in the form of inflammation. With that said, there could be certain signs that we can observe in the body and recognize that there is inflammation going on. Some of these signs are redness, swelling, heat, and pain. If we get stung by a bee, the area will swell up, blood flow to the area will increase, and the sting area will appear red. The pain receptors will be activated, and the area will also be warm to the touch. All these visual observations come as a result of the reaction by the immune cells. The immune cells will actively fight the bee toxin. They will also produce certain chemicals to communicate to the body that there's something going on. These communication chemicals are called cytokines. These cytokines are very small molecules that allow communication among the cells of the body. They are the primary signals of inflammation, and their levels in the body change over the course of the inflammatory process. And although they are not visible, we could measure and record their levels using laboratory tests. This process that we call inflammation is naturally very brief. At the longest, it would last a few days. I should mention here that the body's immune system is very robust and regulates the inflammatory process. This is to say that there are mechanisms in place by the immune system that will turn off inflammation after the issue is fixed. Now, the problem comes in when the immune system fails to regulate itself and the inflammatory process is prolonged for more than what would be necessary. This prolonged stimulation of the immune system is called chronic inflammation, and it is not beneficial. Like I've tried to describe earlier, brief and short-lasting inflammation is how the immune system takes care of problems. But when this inflammation is prolonged, as in the case of chronic inflammation, the immune system gets exhausted and ends up attacking healthy body cells. There are various reasons for chronic inflammation. Some people experience chronic inflammation from an autoimmune disease. These are diseases where the immune system acts against the body. We'll put these conditions aside for today. At some point in the future, we'll have a journal club specifically on these autoimmune conditions. With that said, chronic inflammation could also result from shortcomings of the immune system at clearing an infection, and the infectious agent remaining in the body. The immune system just remains activated without completely clearing the infection. Another reason for chronic inflammation is the presence of a low level of some irritating substance in the body. This substance may be coming from the environment. For this, you may consider an allergen like pollen. Pollen would stimulate the immune system, but since it's always present in the environment, the immune system remains activated without being turned off. The source of the irritating substance could also be the body itself. Some processes in the body end up producing substances that irritate the body, and those substances need to be cleared by the immune system. And this is particularly important for today's discussion, which is on Alzheimer's disease. In the case of Alzheimer's disease, and for the purpose of today's discussion, I'd like for you to think of inflammation as a response to amyloid plaques. Like we said 2 weeks ago, amyloid plaques are the major hallmark of Alzheimer's disease, and these plaques are accumulations of the amyloid beta protein. Amyloid beta is a protein produced in neurons, and in the context of Alzheimer's disease, the protein aggregates and forms plaques outside of the neurons. This amyloid protein is recognized by the immune cells in the brain, which are the microglia. And if you remember from episode 5 of this journal club, the microglia surround the amyloid plaques and form a shell around it. The plaques are toxic for nerve cells, so the microglia, which are the immune cells in the brain, recognize the protein and start an inflammatory response against the plaques. I would like to take you back to the title of today's paper and the major term for today's discussion, which is neuroinflammation. In the case of Alzheimer's disease, neuroinflammation is the reaction of the microglia against the amyloid protein aggregates. This neuroinflammation is chronic because the amyloid plaques continuously activate the immune system, and chronic neuroinflammation is another hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. Over the past decade, there has been a lot of research into Alzheimer's disease from an immune system perspective, and the amyloid protein is especially appealing to the study of neuroinflammation because researchers have started to consider amyloid beta as a cytokine. I would like to remind you what a cytokine is. A cytokine is a small protein that allows communication among immune cells and other body cells. Just to elaborate on that, an immune cell may receive a signal in the form of a cytokine, or it could also release a cytokine to signal other immune cells or affect some response on other cells of the body. Some neuroscientists consider amyloid beta as a cytokine, which means as the brain's way of signaling to the immune system that there is something wrong. The billion-dollar question here is what has gone wrong, and an answer to that question would be the discovery to the cause of Alzheimer's disease. However, the consideration of amyloid beta as a cytokine forms a bridge between neuroinflammation and the amyloid hypothesis, which is a hypothesis that puts amyloid plaques as the primary cause of Alzheimer's disease. And in science, it is good when two avenues of research find commonalities and start to merge, because there's a lot of interesting research that comes out of it. Let me take you back to the inflammatory response in the case of Alzheimer's disease. In the perfect case scenario, the microglia would surround and engulf the amyloid plaques. I would like for you to imagine the microglia like an octopus that extends its tentacles and engulf its prey. However, this critical function of microglia is affected in Alzheimer's disease. In mouse models of Alzheimer's disease, we see that the microglia surround the amyloid plaque and form a shell around it. However, the clearance function of the microglia is deficient. Today's paper investigates this clearance function in microglia and looks at the various components involved in this clearance process. Like I said earlier, the immune system has very robust reactions that need to be tightly regulated. And one of the ways that the immune system is regulated is by immune checkpoints. These checkpoints are molecular requirements that need to be fulfilled before the immune system takes action. These molecular requirements are interactions between two proteins to confirm the necessity of an immune reaction and to resolve acute inflammation so it does not become chronic. In this particular case, we look at the interaction between the proteins PD-1 and PD-L1 in the brain's immune system. The name PD-1 is an acronym for Programmed Cell Death 1, and the name for the other protein, PD-L1, is Programmed Cell Death Ligand 1. Here, the names are not important for today's discussion, and you do not have to remember them, but the way they function is important. PD-1 is a receptor protein found on the surface of the microglia. We call it a receptor protein because it can bind and interact with other proteins on the surface and lead to some internal changes in the microglia. I'll say that again. The microglia are immune cells that have receptor proteins on their surface. These receptor proteins have associated functions in the microglia, but these functions are dependent on the binding of some other protein, which we call a ligand. In this case, PD-L1, where the L in the name stands for ligand, binds to the receptor PD-1 as an immune checkpoint in microglia. Another important information about the PD-1-PD-L1 pair is that they have an inhibitory function on the immune system. Here, when I say inhibitory function, I mean that when the PD-1 to PD-L1 interaction happens, the microglia turn off their inflammatory function. To say that in other words, the binding of PD-L1 to PD-1 stops the activation of the microglia and as a consequence, turn off inflammation. I would like to remind you that acute inflammation is the way that the immune system works, but there has to be a way to keep that inflammation brief, and this PD-1-PD-L1 protein interaction is one of the ways that the body uses to regulate inflammation. And in today's paper, the research team investigated the role of the PD-1 immune checkpoint in Alzheimer's disease. I hope that gives you a good introduction to neuroinflammation and its role in Alzheimer's disease. Now, let's look at the particular experiments in today's paper and the results that came out of them. The first thing that the research team did was to measure the level of the PD-L1 ligand in human Alzheimer's patients in a mouse model for Alzheimer's and compare that level with healthy individuals. They saw that human Alzheimer's patients had higher PD-L1 in their brain, and the source of this PD-L1 is the astrocytes located close to the amyloid plaques. I'll say that again. In Alzheimer's disease patients, the population of astrocytes found in proximity to the amyloid plaques produce higher levels of PD-L1. From our previous journal clubs, you may remember that astrocytes are types of brain cells that support neurons. And from episode 5, I would like to remind you that a subpopulation of astrocytes is recruited by microglia that surround the amyloid plaques. These astrocytes are the source of the PD-L1 ligand that turns off the inflammatory process in the microglia. The research team further validated this finding by using cell cultures of astrocytes. These cell cultures are astrocyte cells that are grown on a laboratory plate, and when the research team added the aggregated amyloid protein to the cultured cells, the astrocytes began producing the PD-L1 ligand. The PD-L1 ligand was first detected as a protein on the surface of the astrocytes, but some of that protein gets cut off from the surface of the astrocytes and dissolves into the extracellular environment. In the case of Alzheimer's patients, or in mouse models for Alzheimer's, the astrocytes produce the PD-L1 ligand, and that ligand is shed off the astrocytes and mixes with the cerebrospinal fluid, which is the fluid found in the brain and the spinal cord. So from these experiments, we learned that there's an increased production of the PD-L1 ligand in the Alzheimer's brain by the astrocytes located close to the amyloid plaques. Along with this increase in the production of the PD-L1 ligand, the research team observed an increase in the receptor protein PD-1. PD-1 is the microglial cell surface receptor for the PD-L1 ligand. In the case of Alzheimer's, the microglia produce more of the PD-1 receptor proteins and place them on their cell surface. And again, similar to the site of the ligand production in the astrocytes, the increase in receptor production was observed in microglia that were located close to the amyloid plaques. I'll say that again. The amyloid plaques induced higher production of the PD-1 receptor in the microglia, which were in direct contact with the amyloid plaques. This shows that the amyloid protein signals the microglia to produce and coat their surface with the PD-1 receptor protein. The research team then recreated this system in microglia cell cultures. These cell cultures are similar to the astrocyte cell cultures that I described earlier. They are microglial cells grown on laboratory plates. When the research team added synthetic aggregated amyloid beta protein to the microglial cell cultures, the microglia would clear the amyloid protein by engulfing it, but would also produce more of the PD-1 receptor. By engulfing the amyloid protein, the microglia are taking on their immune role by clearing that amyloid plaque, and the production of the PD-1 receptor in the microglia allows for the regulation of the inflammatory response. And when the research team used microglia cell cultures that could not produce PD-1 because of a genetic mutation, the synthetic amyloid beta could not be engulfed by the microglia, and instead the amyloid aggregates induced the production of pro-inflammatory cytokines like TNF-alpha. I'll elaborate on this. When microglia that could not produce PD-1 were treated with the aggregated amyloid protein, they did not clear the amyloid protein as much as the microglia that produced PD-1. And the exposure to the aggregated amyloid protein made the PD-1 deficient microglia produce pro-inflammatory cytokines. And as you may predict, prolonged production of pro-inflammatory cytokines is what creates chronic neuroinflammation. This increase in inflammation due to the absence of the PD-1 receptor indicates that the PD-1 immune checkpoint limits the inflammatory process in Alzheimer's disease. The research team then looked at Alzheimer's model mice that were deficient in PD-1. The microglia in these mice cannot produce PD-1, so there is no PD-1-mediated immune checkpoint which can turn off the inflammation. This chronic inflammation is expected to exhaust the immune system in the brain and inhibit the clearance of the amyloid protein plaques. And as expected, the researchers observed more amyloid plaques in the brains of these PD-1 deficient Alzheimer model mice. Here I'd also like to add that these PD-1 deficient Alzheimer's model mice had poor spatial memory compared to the Alzheimer's model with PD-1. When the model mice were put in cognitive tasks that tested their spatial memory, the PD-1 deficient Alzheimer's mice performed poorly compared to the Alzheimer's model mice that can produce PD-1. This cognitive deficit shows that the chronic inflammation from the absence of PD-1 worsens the cognitive symptoms in Alzheimer's disease. The take-home point from this study is that chronic inflammation exhausts microglia and dysregulates the PD-1 immune checkpoint, which is necessary for the clearance of amyloid deposits. The interaction between PD-L1, which is produced by astrocytes, and PD-1, which is produced by microglia, is what allows for controlled inflammation and proper functioning of the immune system. However, in the case of Alzheimer's disease, this immune system function is disturbed and the microglia fail to clear the amyloid plaques and instead enter a prolonged inflammatory response. That was it for today. I get very excited about the prospect of neuroscience when I read papers like this, and I hope it has the same effect on you. As always, I'll add the PubMed link to today's paper under the episode notes. I'll also add the link to the webpage of the Heneka Lab at the University Hospital Bonn. They conduct interesting neuroscience-related immunology research in that lab, so please check out more of their work. Next week, we'll gather again and talk about Alzheimer's disease from yet another perspective. Until then, ciao.